Welcome. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Today's kids are called digital natives, the generation born into the developed world since the proliferation of digital technologies like cell phones, laptops, and tablets. I'm sure you've seen it, the three-year-old who shows an adult how to take a picture with a smartphone, for example. Young people today have the benefit of interacting with games, social media, and new apps with the ease and familiarity of someone speaking their native language. In 2012, a study found that nearly 20% of third graders in the U.S. had a cell phone. By the time children were in their early teens, the number went up to almost 80%. Parents are also more likely to have smartphones today and to let their children, even sometimes infants, play with them. This access to digital communication may help people, young people, learn, socialize, and even get a job later in life. But there could be downsides to digital exposure at an early age. In fact, there could be many. According to public health researcher Deborah Davis, microwave radiation from cell phones and tablets disrupts DNA, weakens the brain's protective barrier, and releases highly reactive and damaging free radicals. A five-year-old's brain, healthy or otherwise, she says, is encased in a thinner skull and contains more fluid than adults. The bone marrow of a child's head absorbs 10 times more radiation than an adult. While those of infants and toddlers will absorb even more. Davis and other researchers say we should be limiting how, when, and where our kids interact with digital devices. But as more and more public school districts are moving towards installing Wi-Fi in classrooms and as educational and testing materials, as well as entertainment for kids, shifts from analog to digital, how do parents, teachers, and other caregivers make sure our kids are safe? So today we're continuing our weekly long series on the effects of the wireless revolution by focusing on children. And joining us for our conversation, Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. For more than a decade, he's been involved in the study of exposure to electromagnetic fields and resulting health problems. And he's particularly worried about the impacts on children. And Lloyd was also an expert witness in the Portland, Oregon lawsuit to remove Wi-Fi in schools. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for joining us. We're also joined by Chris Rowan, who's a pediatric occupational therapist in British Columbia, Canada. She has firsthand understanding and knowledge of how technology can cause profound changes in a child's development, behavior, and ability to learn. Chris is a mother, and she's author of the book Virtual Child, The Terrifying Truth About What Technology is Doing to Children. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Holly.
So let me start with you, Lloyd. Can you remind us, for those who weren't tuned in for Monday's show, what exactly is electromagnetic radiation? How does radio frequency actually work?
Electromagnetic radiation is used, as we all know, for radio, TV, everything else, to communicate to us in space, if you will. And this is actually energy in the fields, and it has been declared a possible carcinogen by the World Health Organization. This is not a light finding. Other possible carcinogens are lead, DDT, asbestos, chloroform, and so on. So the idea here is we're exposing ourselves, and intensity does matter, but we're exposing ourselves to all of these, to this particular part possible carcinogen, when many others are in fact regulated, and this is effectively not regulated. That is, whatever there is in the way of exposure limits are set so high as to be absurd.
Well, and I've had a lot of conversations with people around this over the last couple of weeks, and a couple of things that I hear over and over is there's no scientific evidence of this, and most people just have no idea that your laptop isn't supposed to go on your lap, given the name, that does make sense, or that you're not supposed to be holding a cell phone up to your head. And when I say, well, you know, it's actually in the fine print, if you look at the information about your devices, it says this. And the response that I got back was, well, that's just to avoid lawsuits. So I'd like to just hear from you, what is the science around the effects of wireless radiation? What do we actually know?
Well, first, the science is overwhelming. It's wide and deep. That's what led the World Health Organization to declare it a possible human carcinogen. It is absolutely an obfuscation by industry that there is no science. This stuff is harmful. It's harmful, but it could be used in what I call safe enough mode, and that is kept at some substantial distance from you. The fields decrease very rapidly, and so it's not we have to give up all this stuff. However, the program now is to introduce Wi-Fi into every school in the United States, and this is obscene. As you mentioned, laptops should never be kept on the laps. In fact, laptops and tablets fall under a 20-centimeter, which is about 8 inches, rule. That is, the exposure limit, which is too high to begin with, doesn't even begin until you're 8 inches away from the laptop or the tablets. So
if you just keep them at a distance.
This means that they could be much higher exposures than placing a cell phone to your head, which is also something that should never be done. You want to keep a phone away from you. Even 6 inches away from your head is a reduction of 10,000-fold. That is, it's about 100 times further away. 100 squared is 10,000. The short message, distance is your friend.
And I'm a big believer in the precautionary principle that, you know, until there is as much evidence as we have, that it makes sense to attempt to use these devices more safely. But I think that some people are saying, well, how can we avoid being taken in by junk science? Like, what do we pay attention to, and what is more Cassandra-esque, you know, the sky is falling, this is really, really dangerous?
Well, first off, junk science is a term that industry uses. Junk science is the science they don't like, and solid science is the science they do like, which is their own studies that are basically designed not to find anything.
And okay, Chris, I'm going to pull you in just a second, but Lloyd, you've written a paper about why children absorb more radiation than adults. Can you explain to us?
Well, children's heads and bodies have far more liquid in them. Their skulls are thinner. So they absorb more of the microwave radiation than adults do. And as you did in your lead-in, there's double the absorption into the brain. There is 10 times more in the bone marrow. But even more so, children are more at risk from every carcinogen than are adults. So that if you started smoking at 8, you have a very high risk compared to someone that started smoking at 14. And by the time you started smoking as an adult, you still have a very significant risk, but it's more or less flat with age. So this is true of cell phones as well. You have just these absurd applications that are now on phones. There's one application where you put a cell phone underneath a baby, a newborn infant, and if it moves or makes a sound, it plays mother's voice soothingly. Now, you're irradiating the child the entire time. Of course, to say that a recorded voice of the mother is parenting is another problem that I won't touch on.
All right, Chris, well, let's pull you into this. You're a pediatric occupational therapist. What got you interested in this issue?
Well, I've been working in this field for 25 years and noted a huge change in our children over that time, in increased problematic behaviors, developmental delays, speech delays, and I really started questioning, you know, all this preponderance of diagnosing and many times medicating children with these problematic behaviors, and kind of going, why am I seeing this? Because I have two children of my own, and so I started a decade ago digging into the research, and have spent the past 10 years collating research on the impact of tech on children, and have been astounded at the amount of research there is at showing that these technology is detrimental in many ways to our children. So we need to kind of stop here and go, wait a minute, this is something that we have to monitor, that we have to regulate, we have to start putting in parameters around who's going to use this technology, how much are they going to use, and not do blanket putting it out there in schools and in homes. So really, I cut a lot of slack to the parents and teachers, because in essence, they really haven't been given very, very well any information with which to start monitoring and managing this tech. And I've spent the last 10 years doing workshops. I've done over 250 workshops for parents, health, and education professionals talking about what we do know, and encouraging people to start cutting back on usage. But what's happened since the onset of handhelds is, and by that I mean the tablets, the iPads, the iPhones, is that usage rates have increased dramatically. Children are now using 5 or 6 times the recommended amount, and much younger children are being exposed to all sorts of different types of technology. So again, the problems are escalating rapidly. I've just recently published a document calling for a ban on handhelds for children under the age of 12, and documented 10 reasons that are heavily researched.
Give us 3 of those reasons. What are your top 3?
Well, one is that we don't know about just exactly what Lloyd's talking about. We don't know about the EMF and the impact on young children. They haven't done studies on young children. We won't know if the cancer or whatever is going to be problematic for another 10 years. So I love what you say, Holly, proceed with caution. So that is one. Probably the biggest one is that the 0 to 12 is a time of rapid brain growth. The brain is rewiring and creating these synaptic connections rapidly based on the exposure to the environment, the stimulus in the environment. And what early studies now are showing is that young children are having actual atrophy in the frontal cortex, in their actual thinking part of their brain, in both gray matter and white matter, in the processing parts of the brain and in the connectivity parts of the brain, because of screen overuse. So while we think these devices are teaching our children and that they're learning, and you talked about when you in your intro, you know, learning, socializing, really what we're seeing is our children are becoming far more sedentary because of the overuse. They're overstimulated with this intense visual stimulation. They're isolated from other human beings, which we know is a salient indicator of future success as an adult, and they're being neglected. Parents are overusing to a huge degree, which is why the kids are overusing tech, and we're seeing the results of that in these really problematic behaviors in children.
And a listener wrote in to say, I'm curious to know if you really mean that parents should never hand over their phone to a kid to play a game for 5 or 20 minutes, as many of us do now and then, especially in circumstances where it would be socially unacceptable for a kid to cry, whine, or jump up and down. Can you give us a sense of the degree of priority for this prohibition that you're recommending, as well as the degree of hazard?
I'm saying prohibit handhelds for children under 12, and the reason being
entirely
the American Academy of Pediatrics 10 years ago said nothing for the 0 to 2 year olds, an hour a day for 3 to 5 year olds, and 2 hours a day for the 6 to 18 year olds. The children are overusing, you know, 5 to 6 times that amount, with detrimental consequences physically, mentally, socially, and academically. So what we're seeing is that parents aren't managing this tech well, and when you hand over a device to a child, you have absolutely no idea what they're doing. And generally what happens is the parent hands that device over, picks up their own device, and then it's not 5 minutes later or 20 minutes later, it's 3 hours later. Suddenly, you know, they wake up and go, whoa. So it's very difficult to manage handhelds. So the overuse is profound. They're portable as well, so children can walk away. Young children, 3 to 5, are getting into pornography because half of them stumble into it, you know, when they go on the internet.
Chris Lloyd was kind of nodding his head earlier as you were talking about the effects on young people. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're talking all this week about the invisible wireless web that connects us, and today we're focusing on the effects on children. You just heard from Chris Rowan, who's a pediatric occupational therapist in British Columbia, Canada, and she is a mother and the author of the book Virtual Child, The Terrifying Truth truth about what technology is doing to children. We're also joined in studio by Lloyd Morgan, who's a senior science fellow at the Environmental Health Trust. He's been involved in the study of exposure to electromagnetic fields and the resultant health problems, and he's particularly worried about the impacts on children. And I want to invite our listeners to join this conversation. If you're a parent, a teacher, a librarian, or somebody else who works with kids, what kind of warnings, restrictions do you think there should be on kids' use of mobile and Wi-Fi devices? Our number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or you can post a comment at yourcallradio.org. And if you're somebody who's listening who's found solutions that you want to share with the rest of us, by all means, please call or write. I am the mother of a teenager, and I'm grappling with all of this myself. If you're in the cell phone or computer industry, do you have concerns about kids using these devices? What efforts do you make to communicate these concerns? If you're somebody who works in the health industry, do you talk to parents about these issues at all? 866-798-8255 is a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. One other question, if your school is contemplating a wireless network, what kinds of questions do you have about that? Is there any pushback in your neighborhood about that? And Lloyd, I know we were talking about the effects on children, and you were nodding your head as Chris was talking, so I want to let you get in here.
Well, Chris, there are some studies. There's a Korean study that looked at first grade children, and they followed them until they were like 12 to 13 years of age. And they found a sevenfold increase in ADHD in these children among children with higher blood lead levels. Now, also, we know that microwave radiation opens up the blood-brain barrier, which may explain why it was shown mostly in those children. However, even the children in the lower group showed a threefold increase of ADHD. In addition, Yale Medical School did an in utero exposure of mice and then looked at them after they were born and found that they were hyperactive and also had effectively ADHD-like symptoms. In addition, we have risk of brain cancer in children. I could go on, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, I have another email for you, Lloyd Morgan. What's the evidence you're looking at that connects wireless and cancer, and how does the strength of that correlation compare to, say, the risk of a long-term harm from pesticide exposure or vegetables or living with secondhand cigarette smoke or cancers that pass down through families? Can you give us a sense of the degree of hazard that you're talking about here, and are there analogies?
Well, what we know about cell phone studies is that for more than 10 years of use, there is, in all studies that report that, at least a doubling of risk. Now, what's really concerning is that the average latency time, this is a statistical distribution, is on the order of 30-plus years. So if you think about a bell curve where 30-plus years is the top of it and 10 years is way over to the left, all we can say is it's going to be very much larger than double when everybody's been using these devices for 30 years, but we have to wait to find out.
And you have a personal story that you found out that you had a massive brain tumor in 1995. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I had no idea I had a health problem. I was working in high-tech electronics, and I went to lunch with a work colleague, as one does. And in the middle of the lunch, I had a 45-minute grand mal brain seizure. An ambulance took me to the hospital. Short story is I had a peach-sized tumor of the meninges, the lining of our brain. I asked my neurosurgeon why I got this thing, and he said perhaps electromagnetic fields. So as soon as I was out of the hospital, I went to the literature. I found immediately industry-funded studies for the electricity industry showing a risk of brain tumors and leukemia from electricity fields. There were no studies yet for cell phones. I followed all of the cell phone literature since it began. The data is quite overwhelming, and I could go on at some length as to all the reasons that I believe that it is a carcinogen. Not a possible, not a probable, but a carcinogen.
And you also believe that there are ways to safely use this technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do not have to get rid of this. We have to, first off, in schools, you don't have to use Wi-Fi to get to the Internet. You can have a cabled connection. Students sit at desks. They're able to get on the Internet that way. Now, iPads, which are the universal thing and seem to be more expensive, but also are being used, do not have a wired connection. Most other tablets have a way to connect through a cabled, non-radiating source in schools. So it's not like you have to abandon tablets in schools. It is that you don't have to have wireless connections.
We have a lot of callers that I want to get to. I think I'm going to have to wait until after our break. We've got about 3 minutes before that break, and I wanted to just talk a little bit about regulation. The American Academy of Pediatrics urged the FCC in 2012 to do a formal inquiry into radiation standards for cell phones and other wireless products, because as I understand it, the standards are based on a 1996 information that used like a 220-pound man as their subject. So can you give us an update on FCC's formal inquiry?
Well, it is true that the FCC adopted a standard that was published in 1991 by the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, which had no medical or public health expertise whatsoever. This is engineers. I'm one of that crowd who were working out the best thing for their employers to have. The exposure limits are ridiculously high. They're based upon a false premise that is the only biological effect from these fields is heating, like a microwave oven can heat your coffee, when in fact there is enormous literature showing non-thermal biological effects. That is, no measurable temperature change. The whole premise is a false premise, the whole process. Now, the FCC, which is the chairman, is a former head of the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association.
That's Tom Wheeler?
Tom Wheeler, appointed by Obama after he contributed major campaign contributions to his 2012 campaign. This is the interaction of the government and the industry in cahoots, and essentially they want to harmonize the standards, which effectively triples the existing exposure limits that exist.
What do you mean they want to harmonize? I didn't understand that.
Well, there is a strange organization based in Europe called the ICNIRP, International Commission for Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, accountable to no government. Their finances are not transparent. They're clearly involved with industry, and they use a standard that is triple the FCC standard.
But don't we want the industry to get involved in this? I mean, isn't it in their interest as well?
It's in their interest to maximize their sales, and I think
they're actually... And safety, ultimately?
Well, yes. In the end, this is going to be a very visible problem. And so in their own interest, they could do many things today to make a safer cell phone, but they're determined not to say that there's any problem whatsoever, therefore no need to change.
And you're listening to Your Call. We're spending this week looking at the invisible wireless web that connects us. And today we're focusing on the effects of this digital soup on children. We're speaking with Lloyd Morgan, who's a senior science fellow at the Environmental Health Trust. Also joining us is Chris Rowan, who's a pediatric occupational therapist in British Columbia, Canada. And she's the author of Virtual Child, The Terrifying Truth About What Technology is Doing to Children. We'll go to your calls right after a short break. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call.
This is Your Call on KALW, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255, or you can post your comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you will also find all of the links related to today's program. Coming up at 11 o'clock, live from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Stay tuned.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we'll continue our week-long look at wireless technology and ask, what are the best ways to change our habits and minimize harm from digital devices? We'll wrap up our series on the digital world by focusing on solutions. If you're concerned about the health effects of your cell phone or computer, what can you do to best protect yourself? Friday is our weekly media roundtable. We speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. Today, our question is, how is the wireless world affecting children's health? In 2012, the American Academy of Pediatrics called on the FCC to conduct a formal inquiry into radiation standards for cell phones and other wireless products because the standards have generally been based on the impact of exposure on an adult male. So what do we know about how cellular and Wi-Fi radiation affect the development of babies, children, and teens? And what can we do to reduce the harmful effects? I'll give out the number in a minute. We've got a full bank of callers. You can also go to yourcallradio.org and post a comment or a question, and we'll get to them that way. There's also all kinds of information about where to get more information on this and about our guests. Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at the Environmental Health Trust. There's a link to that website. Chris Rowan is a pediatric occupational therapist in British Columbia, and she's the author of Virtual Child, The Terrifying Truth About What Technology Is Doing to Children. And let's go straight to your calls. Stefan in Larkspur, welcome to your call.
Yeah, hi. I actually just have a couple of quick comments. I have a middle schooler and a high schooler, and I can tell you anecdotally, kids do not put the phone to their ear, much to the dismay of their parents. I mean, they're texting. They don't even have their ringers on. So to me, any strategy that's geared towards increasing awareness among parents with kids putting their phone to their ears is going to hit a flat chord as soon as they bring it up with their children. And the other comment is with respect to, you know, phone use creating more withdrawal socially. I have girls, and I can tell you that they are just as social as they've ever been. And I think, if anything, the phone is sort of just this weird appendage that they have, but it's not interfering in their social life. And I'll take my
Stefan, wait, stay for one second. I also have a teenage daughter, and she, you know, her phone is basically her best friend. I think one of the concerns that I've heard about is that teenagers frequently carry around their phones in their pockets. And from what we've heard, that's not a good idea. I've also, this is not my case, but I've also heard of a lot of young people that sleep with their phone kind of right next to their head. So go ahead. Let's get an answer from Lloyd.
Well, Pew Research has shown that 75% of young teens and preteens sleep every night with a cell phone under their pillow. The phone is in vibrate mode, so the parents don't hear it ring. They wake up. They text back so that the parents don't hear anything. Never mind sleep deprivation. This is like having a phone call every night, all night, irradiating a child's head.
But what about what Stefan's saying is that kids really don't hold the cell phone up to their head because they're always texting. Is texting safer?
It's true that texting has become very, very popular. There's a New Zealand researcher that I have worked with who has studied teenagers in New Zealand, and she found that it was extraordinary that they could be smiling and talking to their parent and or their teacher while texting with the phone in their pocket.
Wow. Well, that's extraordinarily
complicated. I don't know
the manual
dexterity.
So one question that I have is if you think that it, again, using the precautionary principle, that it's not a good idea to have your teenager hold a phone in their pocket, what is the alternative? What do you say to a parent? What advice do you have for a parent, Chris, to talk to your kid about this, about sort of safer ways to maybe be carrying around your cell phone?
Well, one thing we haven't discussed, and Lloyd, I don't know if you have data on this, is that when a child has a cell phone in their pocket or on their lap, it's right next to their ovaries or their testicles, which are producing eggs and sperm. So, again, we won't know until, you know, data comes out in 10 years whether or not that is actually affecting viability of the reproductive systems, the endocrine, the impact on the endocrine system.
But you're saying don't carry it there. So how do you recommend that a parent talk to a teenager? What should a parent say?
Well, there's Bluetooth. There's ways that the device can be away from the child, right, or the youth, that the child can operate the device. And maybe this is something, too, that industry really needs to look at, is how can they distance the device away from the child or the youth, but enable them to operate it.
And Lloyd was actually shaking his head back and forth, kind of, no, that you seemed skeptical about the Bluetooth solution.
Well, the Bluetooth is less radiation than a cell phone, but people seem to wear them all day long, like 16 hours a day, as a kind of a status symbol. And so it's really cumulative with time as well, and it's right next to your head.
What about those cell phones that are on your ear?
Well, a cell phone even on your ear is an issue. But even if you're using a Bluetooth, then where is the cell phone while you're using it? Because it's transmitting. The sperm data, damage to sperm data, is probably the most complete of all the research. There is enormous amount of studies showing either for cell studies, for animal studies, and for human studies, very severe damage. There's one study by a guy named Avendano et al. That showed that there was statistically significant decrease in sperm count and statistically significant increase in DNA fragmentation of sperm from a laptop on the lap while connected to Wi-Fi.
All right, let's go to more callers. We've got a lot of people who want to talk about this. Paul in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Oh, hey, yeah. I'm a physician in San Francisco. I have a 3-year-old son, so I'm very interested in this topic, but I also feel like, I guess my question would be, if you had to report the single most compelling study reporting a link between, say, cell phone usage and cancer, what would that be? I mean, it's not an area of expertise of mine, but I'm looking at a research database here, and it looks like that it's all case control studies, which is considered a relatively low level of evidence and certainly something to be concerned about, but in no way definitive. And I would also, you know, you had mentioned the distance being your friend and a 10,000-fold decrease in exposure with 6 inches. I mean, that would seem to suggest that Wi-Fi would present very little risk since you're, you know, hundreds of feet away from the transmitter, possibly. And just in terms of balanced reporting, you know, I'm sad to hear that you had brain tumor, but I would also, you know, that does introduce some bias into your research and your reporting, and I think we need to acknowledge that. But thank you for talking about this important topic, and I certainly think, especially with children, we need to err on the side of caution if the data is inconclusive.
Paul, we'll go to Lloyd and Chris to ask about the single most compelling study and, you know, just the skepticism around this. But can I ask you a question? As a physician, are you and your colleagues talking about this? Is this something that now pediatricians are being urged to just have a conversation with parents? He's gone. Oh, sorry, Paul. All right. Well, so let's hear about the single most compelling study.
Well, first off, Paul, you're quite correct that the Wi-Fi router is far distance, and that's not the problem. The problem is kids in a classroom with laptops and or tablets. So you have a kid in a classic classroom. You have the child with it. You have one to the right, one to the left, one in the front, one in the back, all irradiating each other throughout the day. So that's the risk, not from the router itself. I think the single most compelling study is recent studies by a Swedish team in led by Dr. Leonard Hardell, that show up to 25 years of cell phone use show that the tumor actually increases with the amount of exposure, that there is a dose response that is for every 100 hours you have a significantly increased risk. For every year since first use, you have a significantly increased risk. On the side of the head where you hold the phone, which is called ipsilateral risk, is much higher than contralateral risk. It goes on and on. The literature is compelling, and I would ask you to take a look at all the studies by Dr. Leonard Hardell.
And we'll have a link to all of that information at yourcallradio.org. Let's go to more callers. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to your call.
Yeah, hello. Thank you. I'll turn my radio down here. I appreciated this information that Mr. Morgan just gave. My concern is this. I live in Palo Alto. This place is loaded with Wi-Fi, and everybody's using cell phones. I don't, but I do go to the libraries. And I'm interested because all of our libraries, including our children's library, all have Wi-Fi routers in them. I went to the city and I said, look, I think this is a problem. You might want to look into this for not only the children but for adults in our libraries at least. I was poo-pooed by this. I mean, the city's IT person or whatever just said, no, we have no information. We think it's safe, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been looking. I went to the World Health Organization website and tried to download just a synopsis, but it wasn't very scientific. So I'm going to look into this Swedish study, but I'm wondering if Mr. Morgan has a contact information with his organization, because I really want to find out about this, not only because it's affecting children, but because I think my health has really been negatively impacted by this exposure. But the city here needs to have something, a concise study that's, you know, foolproof, that I can take to them and just say, look, why don't you just read this and then get back to me and we'll discuss whether this is dangerous or not.
And so Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at the Environmental Health Trust. You can get a lot more information there, but Lloyd, go ahead and respond to Greg.
You'll find, if you went to the Environmental Health Trust website, you would find a lot of information. But the thing where you said that the person said we have no information, therein lies the problem. The information exists, but the public is unaware of that information. Now,
one thing that the Environmental Health Trust, though, is asking or advocating for is a dollar tax on cell phones to fund more studies, right?
Absolutely. If there was a tax and they were independently studied, not having industry involved with it at all, you would find an enormous amount of additional research. But the thing is not to be paranoid about this thing. I live about a five-minute walk from the UC Berkeley campus. I have 24 Wi-Fi signals in my inside my house at any given time from the neighbors. I have no wireless at all. But they are relatively far away. I'm not particularly concerned about that. And I mean, it is proximity. I mean, this stuff is very, if you have anything that's immediately next to you, that's the danger.
So one of the big takeaways I think that you want people to have is distance is your friend.
Exactly. And earlier we said, well, what does somebody do rather than keeping it in their pocket and whatever? Well, school children mostly have backpacks for carrying books and stuff. That's a good place to put it, particularly outside on the outside edge where the books are towards the inside.
And if you're a parent, you can say, hey, I'm hoping for grandkids maybe someday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what grabs teenagers.
Oh, do tell.
If it's not brain cancer, which is a real risk, it's sperm damage.
Okay, so that's what
so
you can say to the teenage boy.
That's very concerning. So any boy keeping a cell phone in their pocket, you want to get them to change their habits. Just tell them plus there's testicular cancer. So if you prefer your left testicle, you put it in your left pocket. But if you want your right testicle, you put it in your right pocket. And I'm sorry for this gallows humor, but
all right. Well, we've got some concrete ammunition for parents. You're listening to Your Call, and we're talking about the invisible wireless web that connects us and how it may be affecting our children. I'm Holly Kernan, and if you want to join our conversation, the number is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. What do you want to know about how cell phones and other wireless devices may be affecting your child's health and brain development? If you're a parent, how are you grappling with these issues? 866-798-8255. 8255. It's a toll-free number. You can also drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you found good solutions to some of these issues with your own kids and teenagers, please share them with us. If you're in the cell phone or computer industry, what do you think about this? What science have you seen, and what do you think the industry should be doing about this? 866-798-8255. And let's go next to Paul McGavin in San Francisco. Hi, Paul. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you very much. What an excellent program. Lloyd Morgan has given some wonderful information about how people can protect themselves. I want to underscore just a couple of points. Number one, things people can do to make their devices safe, airplane mode. That's your best choice. Airplane mode will turn the antennas off. Make sure the Bluetooth antenna is off. That is the only safe way to carry any cell phone or iPad. So anytime you hand it to your children, make sure airplane mode is enabled, which turns antennas off. That's the best thing you can do.
All right. iPad. That's very good concrete advice.
Yes.
Airplane
now, I have
mode.
A little more to share with you. So
please do. Yeah.
Okay, great. iPads are the most dangerous educational product ever created. And they aren't that way from a technical reason. They are that way from a corporate political decision. Every other tablet or Chromebook or laptop out there has a USB to Ethernet connector. And so you can buy a Google tablet, a Microsoft tablet, many of the other Windows 8s or any of the Android tablets, and all of them can use wired networking, which is absolutely agreed to as a safe alternative. So it's just about choosing your technology well. Sit on the couch, use a wire instead of connecting wirelessly. What I was in Sacramento yesterday. I actually talked to a number of politicians. I have sent very important information about what is this. This is radio frequency, RF, electromagnetic fields, EMF. I put a website together in December. It's called rfemf.com. It has very important information, including a Barbara Boxer watch and a Dianne Feinstein watch, because they have received this information, and I have not yet heard back from them.
And
but it's very important that politicians do respond, because right now in California, we have California State Code, and that code says specifically when any kinds of changes are being made physically to a school environment, they cannot introduce a toxic or carcinogenic substance into the environment. And this, by the World Health Organization in May 2011, was classified as a Class 2B carcinogenic substance. They are not allowed to put Wi-Fi into the schools following California State Code. This is the important learning that comes out of Sacramento, and this actually needs to be forced upon our school boards, who are blindly approving $750,000 contracts without even reading the details about the contracts, and they're putting huge levels of this stuff into the room. This is secondhand smoke.
All right.
You would fill your classrooms with secondhand smoke, yet we are.
So, Patrick, you are against Wi-Fi in schools, as is our guest, Lloyd. I want to get to a lot more callers here, Lloyd, so I'm going to just let those comments stand. Thank you for that advice. Let's go to Joe in Fullerton. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And Mr. Morgan, I want to commend your commentary on the indictment of the deployment of wireless technology in the schools. And a comment I'd like to make is that this is a forced exposure. These children do not have a choice. The distance is not their friend. They have these tablets in their laps. They have these tablets in direct proximity to their brain. They have direct contact with their fingers to electromagnetic fields of different frequencies than the Wi-Fi. And what is going on here, in my opinion, is a radiation experiment, the likes of which the world has never seen. And I really want to commend Mr. Morgan for coming out and calling out what is taking place as obscene. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Diana in Monterey Bay. Hi, Diana.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much. I'm, first of all, grateful to Lloyd Morgan, to you, and to the last two callers for the detailed and precise information they've just shared. I'm particularly concerned about the fact that I noticed there are several people in Santa Cruz County who continue to present to the County Board of Supervisors about these dangers, and yet our County Board of Supervisors seem to think that by law they have no ability to stop the proliferation of the Wi-Fi towers that are becoming more and more densely located throughout our county. The various industries, Verizon, et cetera, continue to promote and push hard for proliferation of more and more towers. What do you recommend for those of us who are really attempting to bring these truths forward to our county boards of supervisors, to our city councils? I know in Europe, for example, public spaces, hospitals and other public spaces in Sweden, you are not allowed to have your cell phones on because they recognize that this affects, pacemakers, people with sensitive health. But the reality of the danger to children, I've repeatedly encounter people sort of turning a blind eye and, oh, well, what are you going to do? It's technology. We've got to live with it.
No, all right, so agree. Diana brings up a lot of questions there in terms of cell tower placement. What are any potential dangers there?
Holly, can I? It's Chris.
Hi, Chris. Yeah.
In listening to all this, I'm thinking we're missing a huge point here. Is that schools are bringing all this technology in without any evidence that it does anything other than entertain children? There's very, very weak evidence that shows that it actually educates children in any way, and lots of evidence showing that it's causing.
I don't know. I mean, using Google Docs seems perfectly reasonable to me.
There, you guys are rated 27th on the world stage for literacy by the PISA, the recent PISA results, and this is not a good thing, right? And this is not supporting the profound use of tech, prevalent use of tech in the schools. Really, you know, we really have to kind of step back a bit and go, well, wait a minute, we're doing something wrong here. Like, why are we not performing higher on you know, when you spend so much money on education in the U.S.? And really, it's the teachers have kind of forgot about the basics, teaching printing, math, and reading, and we're throwing iPads at everybody without any evidence that shows that, again, they do anything other than entertain. So, there's a number of reasons why we need to start looking at different ways of operating with tech in schools. It's not just the EMF. It's the fact that kids aren't learning anymore. They've got digital dementia, which is now the new term that's being used in the literature.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Chris. I really appreciate it. I do want to get Diana's question answered, and we're running short on time here, but she really wanted to ask for advice on sort of political action. How do you begin to get the attention and ask that maybe some precautionary principles be...
Well, Diana was quite correct. That is, that local jurisdictions, even at the state level, county level, city level, cannot rule against health problems from cell towers. This is the result of a 1996 Telecommunication Act entirely written by lobbyists. And it took away the right of all local governments except the federal to protect its citizens' health. Now, from a political point of view, I think that one thing that could work, because people are elected, is if they they refuse to deal with an issue. And you could choose many other reasons to deny a cell tower to be installed. They should mount a recall election. If you are afraid of losing an election, then, and that takes a lot of energy, but that would have an effect. Now, anything other than cell towers, whether it's Wi-Fi or otherwise, does not fall under, because none of this stuff existed when the Telecommunication Act was written in 1996. So they can be challenged for the health issues. And, of course, the health issues are really there, even with cell towers, though typically cell towers are relatively far away, so the amount of radiation, it pales by comparison to having a laptop in your lap or a cell phone to your head.
And I want to try and get to more callers, but I do want to ask both of you, Chris, maybe you could get us started. What are other countries doing to research and pay attention to this, particularly with regard to regulations around kids? I've heard Turkey and Finland and Israel used as examples. Can you give us more?
Well, the North America uses our children use the highest amount of tech in any anywhere in the world, and yet even in Canada, we've dropped down now to 13th on the world stage in literacy. We have always been in the top 10, right? And so, really looking at what's going wrong here, is this stuff actually educating children is really, really important. So there are a number of countries that have regulated the use of tech in schools, and England, and I mean, you know, almost everywhere in Europe, who again have the highest literacy rates in the world, the Scandinavian countries, right, and Asia. So trying to operate with some caution and some reason, look at the research, become more evidence-based is very important for not only schools but in homes. And the other thing really for all the listeners is to start thinking about, why are you resisting this information? Why are we moving forward with a technology that could pose, as one of the callers said, you know, we're involved in a radiation experiment here on our children. Why are we doing this? Because I think a lot of parents and teachers are addicted to the tech themselves or are significantly overusing. And now then we look at our kids and we go, okay, so come on board, guys, and here's a tablet and, you know, get busy on it. And we're all a bit awash in this technology illusion that this stuff is really good for us when there's so much evidence showing that it's not.
And we just have a couple of minutes. I wanted to get to more calls, but I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to. You can still post comments and information at yourcallradio.org. In our remaining 2 minutes of the show, can you tell me what do you think are the most important takeaways for parents and caregivers and politicians and doctors, Lloyd?
Well, for parents, be a parent. And that is, you are in charge of your children's safety. And if you're aware of these issues, then you should basically, in whatever manner it works for you as a parent, to minimize your children's exposure to this stuff. If you're a parent with a new kids, I mean, they have these amazing, there's a potty training toy now that's available that basically radiates while the kid is learning to pee or whatever. We live in a time of all things wireless madness. And we need to just be in charge of our children.
All right, and that is going to have to be the last word. We've been speaking with Lloyd Morgan, who's Senior Science Fellow at Environmental Health Trust. We'll put a link to all of that information at yourcallradio.org. Chris Rowan is a pediatric occupational therapist in British Columbia and author of The Virtual Child, The Terrifying Truth About What Technology is Doing to Children. Thanks to both of you so much for joining us. We have resources at yourcallradio.org. I apologize that we couldn't get to all of our callers, but you can still post comments and questions there. Thanks for all of your calls and emails. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. What are the best ways to change our habits and minimize harm from digital devices? On the next Your Call, we'll wrap up our week-long series on the digital world by focusing on solutions. If you're concerned about the health effects of your cell phone or computer, what can you do to protect yourself? What can schools, workplaces, and governments do to educate and facilitate healthy habits around digital devices and networks? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.